Welcome to the Engage and Empower podcast. Behind every successful company is an intentional and innovative approach to empowering your most valuable asset, your people. Join me in having conversations with people and talent leaders as we share our journeys and unpack what it takes to build strong, cohesive teams and employee experiences. From executives at early stage startups to innovators at large public companies, we'll capture the compelling stories of the people behind people teams. Hey everyone, thanks so much for tuning in to the Engage and Empower podcast. I'm your host, Resika Rajagopalan, and today I am so glad to be chatting with Emma Brudner, Head of People at Regora. Emma has a really cool career path, moving from the marketing world into the people and talent world. And so I'm really excited to hear about that journey and what she's working on at Regora, as well as how she's leveraged her unique background in her role as a people leader. So Emma, it's so great to have you on the show. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to chat.
Yeah, I'm really eager to hear all about your story and everything you've been up to lately. If you wouldn't mind just getting us started by giving listeners a quick background and intro on you, as well as Regora, that would be great.
Sure. Well, I'll start with my background. So I was a English and philosophy major. I found my way into marketing. I've been in marketing for the vast majority of my career. That is what led me to tech. I was at HubSpot for just about 5 years on the marketing side. While I was at HubSpot, I got a front row seat to all of the wonderful culture initiatives that they had done there and kind of realized, you know what, I think that's the direction I want to take my career in. So I made a career switch from marketing into people op and a few startup sized companies since then. And most recently, I am at Regora, which is a appraisal automation software platform. And we just raised our Series B, $30 million Series B. Super exciting. We're about to pass our 100th employee. And it has been an amazing journey. I'm so happy to be there.
That is really exciting. I feel like it is a big milestone, especially when you get into that triple digits with employees. It really does, you know, feel like you've kind of moved from being that really early small stage startup to preparing to be, you know, a mid-sized company. I also think it's super cool that you have, you know, this robust experience in marketing. I think oftentimes marketing and people teams do work together a lot, especially around just brand building initiatives, hiring, and, you know, how you're kind of positioning your own values and your culture externally. So I'm sure that background is super, super valuable as you started your role at Regora. And the other piece being that as people leaders, it's so important to really deeply understand every function that you're collaborating with, and having that knowledge by actually living in one of those other departments for years before you stepped into that role is incredible perspective that you have.
Yeah, it is interesting having worn multiple hats and sat in many different teams. Definitely gives me an interesting perspective.
Right. So I love the holistic approach that you take to building culture in your organization. So I thought, you know, kind of piggybacking off of that, we touch both on the talent acquisition side as well as the internal culture piece today. So starting on the talent acquisition side or recruiting, whatever it is that you want to call it, we've all seen the evolution of good and bad interview questions over the years. So talk to me about the types of things that interviewers should be thinking about when evaluating talent and should be looking out for in an interview that's ultimately going to enable them to find, you know, the best candidate for their organization and for their role that they're hiring for.
Absolutely. Great question. Well, I think about interviewing. I always back up, right? I back up to the point of even like role design itself. So before you get to the interview, right, you need to understand, okay, what am I actually looking for in this role? And I always challenge my hiring managers to identify the competencies, the skills, the expertise, you know, what are the bullets? Like, what are the 3 to 10 bullets that you're looking for in this role? And then if we frame them in terms of competencies, from there, you can create a list of interview questions that behavioral interview questions that suss out, okay, well, how does this person demonstrate this competency, or how have they demonstrated this competency, right? And the reason why I'm so big on behavioral interview questions that draw on past experience is because it's a really helpful way to evaluate for potential as well, right? So it's not just about like, well, have you done this? okay, well, it's not about the specific experience itself. If we make it about the competency, like, okay, we're looking for someone who is a sound decision maker or, you know, something like that, right? Then we can say, okay, tell me how you've demonstrated, tell me about a tough decision you had made in the past, right? And now all of a sudden this candidate is telling the story. And even if they've never done it in that specific, you know, don't have the specific experience, they can tell you about a time that they demonstrated this competency that then a manager, even if they haven't done this specific role, they can evaluate this person based on potential to do this role. So I think about interviews itself as it's like 90% prep, like 10% like the interview itself, right? And it all starts with a really solid role design.
Yeah, I think that's a great approach. And I'm sure we've all kind of seen the evolution of the really convoluted questions like how many golf balls can you fit in a bathtub? And, you know, what is this brain teaser? How do you think about that? I think really being able to map back some of the behavioral questions as you've shared to competencies can be really helpful. Specifically around the hiring manager interview, I feel like this can be kind of a high pressure interview for a lot of hiring managers because it's a 30-minute call. It's really the first conversation after the recruiter screen. The decision that you make is either it could result in you passing on a really great candidate. It could result in a lot of interviewing time for the team on a candidate that, you know, might not be super qualified for the role. So what's your suggestion on the focus areas that hiring managers have on their initial call? Because there's so many things you could cover, specific skills, values, past experiences, questions that this person has for that person. And how do you kind of tap into concepts like self-awareness and, you know, that the candidate's ability to reflect? And there's just so much you can cover. So how do you coach hiring managers for that call?
Yeah, so much you can cover. I think about it in three different buckets. So again, if we're going back to role design and competencies, think about, you know, this shouldn't be like a laundry list, right? Like this should be 3 to 10 things. And so I think about, okay, you know, we are trying to suss out who should move on to the next step, right? So with that said, prioritize that list of competencies. What are your top, you know, two or three? Create an interview question around that. And then that should account. That's probably, you know, 15 minutes of your call right there. I think that, so that's role specific, right? So make sure that you're testing your most important competencies. And you can always dig into others or deeper if you need to later on. This is just about, okay, should this person make it to the next step? I think values are really important to include early on as well. And again, I sound like a broken record here in terms of going back to design, but I'm a huge stickler for values and creating values around observable behaviors. And so those really lend themselves then to once you say, okay, well, how do I interview for values? Well, if you have values that are behaviors, then you can create a behavioral interview question to talk about, you know, how have you lived these values? Even if they're not these, you know, even if you have no idea what the company's specific values are, you've demonstrated these behaviors in the past or not. So I always recommend spending some time on values. And then I try to leave a good amount of time, especially in light of the pandemic these days, in terms of questions for the person, you know, the person has for me, right? Because I think that, you know, over the last year or so, job market has been up and down, all around, really tough. People have lost their jobs, right? I want to make sure that they know that, you know, I'm aware and hiring managers are aware that you're considering us just as much as we're considering you. And you might have, you know, something going on in your life or some circumstances, or, you know, you might have additional things that you really need answers to understand whether this company is right for you or this role is right for you at this point in time. So I try to leave like 10 minutes of questions and really just like completely open it up. That said, sometimes candidates are like, I don't have a ton of questions, right? Which is totally fine too, right? Like I can, you know, they can ask, I always have more questions at the ready if they don't want to fill that time. But I have seen that people do appreciate having more time for questions recently.
Yeah, yeah. That last point they made there is an interesting point. I've seen candidates or in debriefs and things like that in the past, like a lot of the times the questions themselves that candidates are asking, those can, you know, be really positive things. Oh, this candidate asked about this. That's really great that they're thinking about this. Or this candidate had zero questions, you know, what's the level of curiosity that this person had? Or, you know, how is it that we covered every possible thing that this person could want to know about our company in a 25-minute call? So I guess what's your advice to hiring managers as they are evaluating a candidate, specifically around the questions that person's asking? Is that something that you feel like is valid, that you would kind of shy away from? What's your thought on that?
I think it's valid. I would say that it's just another piece of data, right? I don't think anything in an interview is just should be like a one like make or break, you know? So let's say this person didn't have any questions or had like one question, but everything else was like amazing, right? I wouldn't be like, oh, well, this means that they're not a, you know, whatever. They are disqualified because they didn't have any questions. I mean, people, you know what I mean? People get nervous. Who knows? Maybe they've lost their, you know, whatever it is, right? Like, I'm willing to give you the benefit of the doubt. It's just another piece of data. So I do think great questions are asking more about I always like it when a candidate envisions themselves in a role and sort of is like, what would success look like in this role? Or tell me about the first like 6 months, what you would expect me to do, right? All those traditional like things in terms of showing that, hey, I understand that I want to be successful in this role. I want to, you know, hit the ground running and all that stuff in terms of showing impact early on. I like those questions. I also love it personally when a candidate asks about culture at a deeper level. So for example, you know, what's your company's culture? How would you describe, or how do you have like fun together? But it's like, well, how do people know that they're successful here? How do they interact with each other? How do you, I don't know, I'm trying to think of like some of the unique questions I've heard in the past.
You're good. Those are great questions. Yeah. I mean, I think in the past, I've also seen candidates show a lot of interest around the business. And I think especially at small companies, when you're in lots of cross-functional roles, it's always really helpful to have a strong understanding of how the business actually operates and what we're largely kind of working on, even going sort of beyond the scope of that specific niche role. Not always something that you're going to see on the hiring manager call, more so, you know, in later stages, just usually from a time perspective. But I always think it's great when candidates are interested in the broader mission, because I think those are the types of pieces that, you know, is going to drive someone long term if there's a lot of excitement and investment there, just kind of broader and in the broader company and the broader mission there. Yeah. What's your advice? I know you've been in this position yourself in the past. And so for candidates that are looking to make a career transition like you did, going from, you know, one function to maybe a related, but how can hiring managers be thinking about that as they're evaluating candidates that don't have that direct on paper experience? You did talk a little bit about, you know, the behavioral interview questions and things like that. But even getting to that interview call, even getting to that point where they're having that conversation, what is it that you recommend folks that are going through a career transition do? I think we're going to see a lot of that, especially through the pandemic. A lot of folks have taken a beat and started thinking about, okay, what do I want to do next? There's so many different opportunities. Companies are going virtual. You know, there are new job opportunities opening up that didn't exist before. So how do you encourage candidates to position themselves?
Yeah. Well, I always say my biggest piece of advice for anyone trying to make a career transition is to just stick with it. Like, stick with it. It's not always going to be as easy as it seems, right? Like, I wish it were as simple as, oh, I want to make this career transition and, oh, I got this interview and, oh, I nailed the interview and, oh my gosh, now I have the role, you know? Like, I mean, speaking of my own career transition, it was really, the road was a lot bumpier and bendier than I thought it would be, but that's okay, right? I think it's a matter of if this is something you're really interested in, you know, be a self-starter. Like, think about like, okay, how can I learn more about this field? I mean, me personally, I always say I became the number one HubSpot people ops groupie because every single, you know, I try to take everybody out to lunch and pick their brains and learn about their day to day. And everyone recommended, you know, what kind of books would you recommend? Podcasts? Who should I talk to next? Should I get certifications? Like, you know, I picked up something from everybody and asked them about, you know, what do they wish they had known when they had started or how do they keep learning? So I think that just try to like soak up all you can and be proactive about it. And then, yeah, I think once you get to that call, again, understanding that not every career transition is not easy to do and not every interview is going to work out and not every hiring manager is going to get your experience is transferable. And that doesn't mean you did anything wrong. That's kind of, again, like sort of the nature of changing careers. I can't tell you how many times I, you know, totally flubbed on first level calls trying to explain my experience and how it's transferable. But I think the best advice I got from Sarah DeBruhl, who's now a recruiter at Zapier and who's been so wonderful, but was really like tell the story more so than focus on like the specifics, right? Like the, you know, well, okay, this job says that you have to do XYZ type of task. Well, I've never done that before, right? It's sort of, okay, well, that's kind of a non-starter, but like tell the story about like, okay, here is the overarching impact it seems like this role needs to have. Like, here's like the why of, you know, why this role exists. And here is the sort of impact that I've had, right? And here's the, how I think I could contribute to the why, and kind of like construct that like top level story versus it's tempting to get into the nitty gritty details, but it's almost like a thesis statement. It's like, figure out what your like high level headline is. Here's my experience. Here's how I think that I could have this impact, even though I haven't done this specific role before. And then it's much easier to get to frame everything else once you have that kind of header thesis statement locked down. Almost like a good little like tagline in a weird way.
100%. I mean, I think that's very relevant and important advice for anyone looking for a job, even if they are kind of sticking in their own field. You're going from one engineering role to another. You're going from one marketing role to another. I think it's really important to have your own story as to why this company, why this role, what type of impact are you looking to make? Because reality is, like, even within your own field, like, there are, you go on LinkedIn, there are, you know, hundreds of jobs, right? So why that one? And I think it's always important to have that story so that you're able to communicate your value, but also know for yourself, like, is this the right, you know, choice for you? And so I'm sure when you are making a career transition, it may be tempting to take any job that will offer you the opportunity. But I'm sure having that story enables you to be in a position where you are able to reflect on if it is the right opportunity as you start this new path based on the impact that you're trying to make. So I love that. I also think it highlights some of the strengths that you have with the unique experience that you're bringing that maybe somebody else with a more traditional background doesn't bring in, which in your case is marketing. And so transitioning into that, how do you communicate or convey what is core to your culture through your employment brand? Like, what is your advice to other companies that are developing their brand? Very important now from the perspective that a lot of that information is consumed virtually. You're not going into an office and absorbing that in-person experience of, you know, what the culture feels like when you're walking in. And I think marketing is a tough art that people, professionals aren't always familiar with or, you know, oftentimes partnering closely with their marketing teams around. So how can marketing and people and talent work together on these issues and develop a brand voice that feels authentic, not forced, and, you know, distinguished enough from the other beautiful websites there are out there?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I had a CEO at Lola.com, Mike Volpe. It was amazing. I learned so, so much from him. But one thing he would always say was that you should design your culture like a product. And that really stuck with me because if you think about it, you know, when you're thinking about product design, you have to be very intentional about, okay, who is this product for and who is it not for? What are the features it's going to have? Like, what is it going to do? And what is it not going to do? Right? Like, you have to, it's a matter of prioritization and getting like really, really specific on your target market and how you are delivering value to that target market. And I think one thing that people ops can get trapped into is trying to be all things to all people, right? Like, and think about that from a product perspective. You would never buy a product that's like, it does this and this and this and this and this and this, right? Oh my God, what? Like, you know, then it's like, what does it do? It's like, if you're trying to be all things to all people, you're probably not doing any one thing well. And that's really hard from a talent attraction perspective because number one, it doesn't help people either choose you or self-select out. It's sort of like the number two thing is you kind of become this white noise, right? Because it's like, okay, if you're trying to be all things to all people and you get into this, you know, war for perks and benefits and, oh, we have a foosball table and we have free beer and we have this and we have that. And then it's like, well, but isn't that just every other company? You know, like then that becomes really difficult think about it from a candidate's perspective. It's, how am I differentiate? What makes this company different than any other company? So it's almost like I think companies get a little bit worried with their branding in terms of, well, you know, we want to attract people towards us. We don't want to drive anyone away. But it's almost like the more clear and specific you are about what you're doing and what you're not doing, just like any good product design, is going to help the people that you want to come find you, like, say, oh my gosh, this is the company for me, this one in particular versus any others. And the people who your company is not right for, they're going to self-select out. And that's a good thing, you know, like that's not a bad thing, right? I think about everything in terms of culture like that, like getting really specific about the quote unquote, like features of your culture and then just making them incredibly memorable and incredibly known, both in your company and outside of your company. So it's, in terms of marketing, it's like a messaging challenge. It's figure out like the three things that you're going to be amazing at. And then those three things are your talking points forevermore. You know, make sure that everybody in the world knows about these three things and that these three things are going to attract the right people that you want to have work at the company. So I think in terms of tactically, I think about values, number one, huge stickler for values. And making them, I think there's no too early to start values. Think about, you know, what's organic at your company, what's working, what makes it different from, you know, any other place that you've worked. And then take those, identify those behaviors, and then wrap some kind of like company specific branding on top of them. You know, make them memorable. I think that's the number one thing with values is these should be behaviors. They should be guideposts for how we expect people to act here and treat each other, right? But they should also be memorable, because if they're not memorable, they're not useful. You know, like what's the point of values if nobody knows what they are? So I think the value of having memorable values just pays dividends, because then if people remember your values, they act on them, they reinforce them. You can weave values throughout your entire employee life cycle. You can use them for branding. So I think that putting on your marketing hat towards values is definitely a worthwhile pursuit. And then the second thing in terms of making sure that your brand is authentic, I spent many years ghostwriting for people, and which was a great experience. But what I learned from that is it doesn't matter. It's not always like you have to be the person who's writing the thing in order for it to be impactful, right? So for example, I was ghostwriting for sales leaders a ton. This is when I was this HubSpot sales blog. And it's true, salespeople do not want to hear from, hey, I'm in marketing. I've never sold anything in my life, but like, here's how you sell things. They're like,
sure.
What do you know? You know, like you've never picked up the phone and talked to a prospect, which is like fair. But right, salespeople who have, they're busy, they don't have time to write. So it was perfect. It was like, okay, do you have 15 minutes to call me? Tell me about how to craft a messaging pitch or whatever it is. I can type that up. I can make that into a lovely blog post for you. You get your byline on it. And then people are going to say, oh yeah, this person knows their stuff, you know? I think about the best employer brand assets that you have are your employees. Figure out how to enable them to tell your story. Because again, people ops people saying, oh, this culture is amazing. Like white noise. Yes, of course. Like if you're going to say the culture is amazing, every people ops person says that, you know? So think about how do you get your employees to tell your story? How do you get them excited to say, oh my gosh, I love working here and here's why? So I try to empower the folks around me as much as possible and try to make people understand like the power of having an employer brand. Like it's not just limited to, you know, a people ops goal. It means that if we have a great employer brand, you get awesome teammates faster, people that you want to work with, right? So there's a what's in it for me aspect of here too.
Right, 100%. I love what you said about the culture as a product piece. Because I think in addition to providing focus for candidates that are looking at jobs and they're like, okay, in all of this noise, what makes this company unique? I think it also gives that clarity to employees. And to me, culture is something that everyone's constantly reinforcing, whether it's your values or whether it's that, you know, cornerstone of your culture and its focus around sustainability or philanthropy or something. If people know what it is that sets you apart, then they're also able to then focus on how they can continue to build that muscle wherever it is. And so I think it's a cycle and it continues to feel authentic. It's driven from within and you're giving people that North Star versus just, yeah, we do everything and we're great. And, you know, we're an awesome place to work. And just kind of generally tackling it from that perspective. In terms of empowering employees to, you know, share their stories, do you like to do spotlights? Do you like to have your employees engage in social channels? Like, how do you best rally that? Because I know sometimes that can be hard in terms of thinking about the best way to open that door and make sure that employees kind of feel authentically, you know, where you're not putting the onus on somebody else. And so how do you do that?
Yeah. I think about everything that we do from a cultural perspective. I think about how do we make sharing opportunities in and how to, it's not like a requirement, you know, it's like something that if you want to do it, like cool, right? But for example, like we're going to do a happy hour on Monday. Hopefully this doesn't get published before Monday. So I don't like spill beans with our like employees. This is kind of a surprise, but we're going to surpass our 100th employee on Monday. So we're having like a big, like 100 employee themed happy hour. And at one point we're going to do like a little like selfie stop, you know, where everybody like takes like, it's like, oh, 100 employees. We're going to send out like little 100 employee koozies, you know, okay, put your drink of choice in your koozie, take a selfie, you know, send it to us. We'll compile it into things like that. It's like, how can you just bake it in? Like, this is already happening. We're having fun. Like, how can you just make it natural? And it's not something you have to. So that's one thing. I think about that with every single event, anything that we do is like, what's the shareable component of this? And then I also think about, there's definitely, it's almost kind of like a brand ambassador type program that I try to put together. Think about like, who are the folks that are, you know, those amazing, like magnetic people, like they're doing awesome stuff, you know, super engaged in their work, you know, those people that are going to attract other people to them. And then again, I was a ghostwriter. It's like, think about how you can enable that person to, you know, get their story out. Like, at Lola, when I was at Lola.com, I had like content partnerships set up with, I think it was like four or five folks across in different teams across the organization. And for every month we would sit and meet and I would say, okay, you know, tell me about, are you comfortable with do you like podcasts? Do you want to speak? Do you want to write? Like, what, you know, do you want to do LinkedIn stuff? Like, what is it you want to do and how can I help you? Some folks they just want to be supported in some way. Some folks were like, oh man, I would love to speak, but they don't want to do the legwork on figuring out, you know, like, give me your abstract and I'll submit that to places. I'll do all the admin work. And then you just like show up and speak. Hooray.
Sure. Sure.
Some people I worked with an engineering manager who's like, I've always wanted to write. I've always wanted to do like some personal blogging stuff, but I need an editor. I feel, you know, I don't know. It's like, okay, great. You know, write all your thoughts down. Like, I will be your editor. Hooray. So it's obviously that was a very like one-to-one scenario, but I think about, you know, how can you, whatever avenue those people are comfortable in, how can you enable them to do that thing?
Right.
Like the what's in it for me aspect, like this is building their personal brand. That's good for them too.
100%. Yeah. I mean, I think just kind of giving people the tools as you would with any initiative is always really, really helpful. And I think it's empowering. People love to be a part of fueling growth at your company, whether that's new users or new customers or bringing in new employees. If they are really excited about the culture, that's a really powerful thing to be a part of. One last question I have, this has been so helpful, around employee engagement and brand building. And this is a question that I think is helpful to reflect on both, you know, externally as you're thinking about brand, but also internally as you're thinking about your own culture. You've previously talked about the difference between happiness and employee engagement. So what's the difference? What do you focus on at Regora? And how can other companies be thinking about this both internally and externally as their messaging?
Yeah. So I think that there's such a focus on are we happy employees? And it's obviously, I don't want anyone to be unhappy. I like happy people, right? But the reality is that I think employee engagement and fulfillment is like a deeper level. And it's not exactly the same thing as happiness. So it might seem like a little semantic change to talk about like employee fulfillment versus happiness, but I think it makes a big difference. And what I mean when I say fulfillment is more like, do I feel like I'm learning here? Do I feel like I'm growing? Do I feel supported? Do I feel challenged? Guess what? There's been some of the most fulfilling roles I've had in my career, I would not say I was extremely happy all the time because challenge is hard, you know, like
yes.
New things, it's hard. It's a struggle. And guess what? I learned a ton. I'm so grateful for that experience. And I was incredibly engaged, but I wouldn't say I was super, would rate, you know, oh my God, I had the best day of my life. I was so happy, you know, like that's kind of the nature of growth. So I think about reframing it in terms of, you know, are we actually giving our employees, are we providing the experience that's going to help them grow and feel fulfilled here? Versus, I think if we focus too much on happiness and use that word too much, we can overinvest in those sort of flashy perks that are, you know, again, they're fun, but like, are they really fulfilling long term? You know, probably not. I mean, frankly, you know, connection is super important, but if it comes down to, hey, should we invest in, you know, learning and development and training and giving people a seminar on feedback or some kind of professional development, or should we spend, you know, X amount of more money on happy hours and trivia? It's kind of like, you know what, I'm going to go for the professional development, you know?
Sure.
Sometimes it's a both and, it's not always an either or, but I try to think about prioritizing those things that are maybe less, you know, sexy, but I think they're more meaningful to people long term.
Yeah, 100%. I love the point around growth and challenges. I think even, you know, in the diversity space, we're A lot of companies are investing around enablement, and those conversations and those workshops are not always easy. They're not always, you know, they're not always designed to make everyone happy. They're designed to help you grow and to help you learn and to build a better workplace and world for everybody. And so I think continuing to optimize for happiness, that can mean different things to different people. When you are able to focus on engagement, you're really thinking about the organization and your mission and your values holistically. And I think that that's definitely the way to build resilience and more of that long-term, employee engagement and growth, which is super, super important. So
you brought up DEI, and I know this is, we're jumping back a little bit, but one thing I did that jogged my memory that I did want to say is I wish more job candidates asked about DEI in the during interviews, because I think that job candidates sometimes don't realize the power that they have to signal like what the market is asking for, is expecting, right? So for example, like I, you know, super passionate about DEI, right? Like I'm a big believer that, you know, workplaces need to do, you know, much better in terms of DEI. And I think that job candidates, I don't get asked about DEI that too often, definitely like an uptick since 2020 in candidate calls. But I know it's something that a ton of people care about. And that's the one thing that I was like, oh, I wish that candidates would ask more about DEI, because then that's going to put, you know, pressure on companies to really start delivering, you know, some real action on DEI. And, you know, that's, I think that job candidates sometimes don't realize they have that power.
100%, yeah.
Those questions are a signal to, you know, you hear those questions enough and it's like, oh, we should really do something about this. So that's always why I say job candidates, like, please ask me about DEI. I love when you ask me about DEI.
Yeah. I mean, that's a powerful thought right there. I mean, a lot of whatever it is that you're asking about, whether it's DEI or how you're rewarding hard work or, you know, how are you recognizing your employees around your values? The more candidates ask about these things, the more companies really need to invest in it. So you're absolutely right. The questions that candidates ask, candidates hold a lot of power in those conversations. And so that's a really, really great point, Tawn. Thank you so much, Emma. I love everything that you've been able to share. And I think it's so cool that, you know, you're able to make this transition to marketing to people and bring that experience to this field. There's so much cool work that you've been able to do and everything you've shared just around interview best practices and how to build brand and how to think about culture. These are all super relevant today, especially as companies are kind of thinking about it and almost like with a different canvas than they had in the past. We're all really innovating right now here. And so great to hear your story. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure. It was fun.
Yes, always fun. I'll talk to you later.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this podcast and want to hear more stories like this, please subscribe for the weekly drop and feel free to share around with your people and talent colleagues. I'd love your feedback, so please leave a review and let us know what you enjoyed and what types of topics you'd like to see covered in the future. The more reviews and subscribers we get, the more quality content we can consistently deliver to you. If you're interested in being on the podcast, feel free to reach out to me at russica@engageandempower.org. See you next week.